This episode of Literary Treks is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for your desktop or mobile device. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. Also, help us keep Star Trek discussion coming to you each day by becoming a Trek FM patron through Patreon. Get access to exclusive content and become part of the team. You'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm.
Hey everyone, I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Taking all these books?
I thought I'd take some light reading, in case I got bored.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Literary Treks, our dedicated books and comic show here on Trek FM. I am one of the hosts, just one. And with me, as he is always, is Dan Gunther. Dan, how are you doing, man?
Hey, Matthew. Doing well, as usual. Excited again to be here for what I think is probably going to be another pretty fun episode of Literary Treks. So, good to see you tonight.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it is going to be fun. You know, we're going to be talking about the second part of the Gold Key Comics, Volume 2. And I got to say, they are a couple... they're a whopper of issues. So I'm excited to dive into that. We did want to cover... We've got some news that came out from the Visionary Treks podcast. They were talking to Margaret Clark about some things that are going to be coming up. And... one of them was talking about the Prey trilogy and that it really is going to be what we were kind of thinking. It's going to be an epic crossover with Titan, Deep Space Nine, TNG, and a surprise from the man himself, somehow, Captain Kirk.
Yeah, really interested about that. So, you know, how is Kirk going to be in this story? Interested to find that out. Kind of cool. Really, maybe the, kind of the next big Destiny trilogy or something like along those lines. So pretty excited about that. Another little brief thing that was brought up was next year we're getting a TOS book by Christopher L. Bennett, which we know called The Face of the Unknown. And we found out there that that one's actually going to be a sequel to the original series episode, The Corbomite Maneuver, which makes sense. You know, The Face of the Unknown was a phrase from that episode. So, you know, kind of cool we're getting a sequel to that.
Yeah, that is pretty cool. I'm hoping we'll see Baylock again. Mm-hmm. So that would be great.
And and the Navigator too, who went over to join him there.
Yes, find out what actually happened to that guy.
Bailey, you know, that was Kirk, his name.
Yeah, people just like to just, Kirk just likes to put people places and never check on them. So
exactly.
Well, we also got some news that's pretty cool. We knew that Kirsten Beyer had another book coming out, Architects of Infinity, but she gave away the other title, which is To Lose the Earth, which, wow, goodness, that seems pretty epic.
Mm-hmm.
And both books are apparently coming in 2017, so woohoo!
Yeah, definitely, that title, I'm really curious about that one.
Yeah, it sounds pretty bad to lose the Earth. It's not something you usually just misplace.
Yeah, you know, Starfleet just kind of looks out the window of Space Dock and goes, now wasn't there a planet there before? Oh, God.
Weren't we orbiting something? That's weird.
Where did we put that? That's not good. Well, the other big news that came out, which is actually a bit of a surprise, apparently two of the books coming out in 2017 are from author David Mack. Now, that's interesting because we had heard that he was going to be kind of taking a bit of a break from Trek in the next little while to focus on his original novels, the World War II fantasy trilogy that he's busily writing and should be coming out pretty soon here. So it looks like we're getting some unexpected Trek from David Mack. So that's pretty exciting.
One of those has to be a follow-up to his Section 31 book, so please God,
oh,
yes.
Oh, I really, really hope so. Yeah.
Please.
I know there's a lot of people looking forward to that one.
And I am one of them, so I really want to know what happened to Bashir. I really hope that it would be great, actually, if both of them were, you know, Section 31 books to really wrap up this storyline, and so we can have Bashir back in the regular flow of the Deep Space Nine 24th century. So this fantastic news. I couldn't have been more excited about this. Dan, before we hit the fantastic episode that we actually have coming up when we talk about the Gold Key comics, and I'm sure we're going to laugh a lot, let everybody know about where they can find us all over the interwebs with Literary Treks.
Well, Matthew, Literary Treks is, of course, available on iTunes. And, you know, if you're downloading us from iTunes, why don't you give us a quick star rating and review and hit that subscribe button? It really, really helps other Star Trek book fans find us. And, you know, we can really get the word out there about this podcast for people that really enjoy reading Star Trek novels and comics. But if you're not on iTunes, we've got you covered as well. You can find our podcast on Stitcher, TuneIn, SoundCloud, Windows Phone. And of course, you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website and grab the RSS link there as well. If you want to get into contact with us, there are many ways you can do that. On our website, we have a contact form at trek.fm/contact. You can leave us a voicemail. We'd love to hear from you. Look in the sidebar on the show page or go to speakpipe.com/trekfm. We're on Twitter. Our username there is @trekfm. And we're on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. While you're on Facebook, we also have the Babel Conference, which is our listeners-only group. Just type the Babel Conference, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, or you can go to our website at trek.fm and click Discussion on the menu bar. Now, a special group we have for Literary Treks is our group on Goodreads. Just go to Goodreads, search for Literary Treks. We have bookshelves there with all of our previously covered books, as well as what we're currently reading, so you can keep up to date on what's coming up for future shows. And of course, there are always great conversations happening about all the books and comics that make up the Star Trek universe.
Dan, I love these nights. And it's a little bit like Talladega Nights, but, well, actually, it's just as funny as Talladega Nights with Will Ferrell. And it's when we talk about the Gold Key comics. And tonight is no exception because we have three great comics here from the volume two. So if you're trying to find these three, you'll find them. They're the last three in volume two. And goodness, I mean, we start off with just a humdinger right there. We're going to be using a lot of fun phrases because, well, there's a ton of them in these stories. And this one is called Spectre of the Sun. And I got to say, you know, anytime that, you know, you're stopped by an alien species because they had a genie in the bottle that they released and it grabs the Enterprise, wow, that's a great way to start the issue. You know you're in for a treat.
Yeah, it's definitely quite the visual we're starting out here. You know, I was kind of thinking, like, oh, this is so over the top. This is so silly. But then, you know, you think back to, like, original series episodes, Who Mourns for Adonis, right? You've got the Greek god Apollo's hand grabbing the Enterprise in space. So, you know, I guess this is kind of par for the course. You know, why not have a big giant floating space genie grab the Enterprise as it goes by?
I'm just imagining that all of a sudden, if there was a trailer for this, JJ version-wise, it would be Christina Aguilera's genie in the bottle playing in the background, you know? And so, yeah,
exactly.
Like it.
Yeah. You know, I was kind of thinking maybe we'd gone past the silliness of, you know, Vulcan voodoo drinks and books and stuff, but no, it's,
oh no,
it's definitely here in full force.
it is here because, you know, the Enterprise is caught by a genie, a space genie, which those are things in Star Trek, just like a Vulcan voodoo library. And Kirk and Spock and McCoy are magically beamed to this castle where they're confronted by a person named Chang. So, you know, we keep running into these things where their names we'll see later. Like, did the writers for Star Trek VI know these comics, and that's where this comes from? Because he actually looks a little bit similar, too. He's bald and everything.
A little bit, yeah. I could see Christopher Plummer playing this guy a little bit. Could be pretty good.
Yeah, it's really funny. I just kind of love it. So, and it turns out that Chang wants them to retrieve the Spectre of the Sun because he's trying to win a war against Xandu, who has a flaming sword literally hanging over the city. If you've ever wanted to know what the Sword of Democles looks like, they find it. It's on this planet. But it's a flaming sword, so it's even worse than you thought.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I was actually expecting someone to say, like, oh, there's a giant sword hanging like the sword of... Oh, wait, that's not the best metaphor, I guess. That is just actually what it is.
I loved it. That was awesome. And so what's so weird is, you know, he pulls Kirk and his crew out of the sky to go on this journey to find this Spectre of the Sun, and then he sends Marla with him, who is a beautiful woman. You got to have the beautiful woman as their guide. And who should they run into but apparently the Stone Giants from The Hobbit?
Yeah, I mean, the stone creatures at the end of Star Trek V, we finally find out, you know, why they weren't in that movie. You know, they blew the budget on getting them into this comic story here. So we get this actually pretty cool action sequence of them defeating these giants by using their strength against themselves kind of thing. And it's actually, that's one thing I will say about these is I really started to appreciate the artwork a lot more than I have in the past, because I was kind of focusing on just the silliness of the stories, but there's some really imaginative and well-drawn stuff going on here. This is pretty cool.
I do think that is one of the things that is really fun. The art is good, and it has so much going for it. It's so colorful, and like you said, it has a lot of imagination behind it, and it feels like fun. I mean, it really does, and it fits it so well. I love that they are able to confuse the giants by running around in a pattern that has the giants actually attack each other,
yeah.
And kill each other. That's awesome.
And it's you know, it's well illustrated here, like exactly kind of how they do that and stuff. And it's really impressive. It's kind of one thing that, you know, they couldn't really do on the television series, and they're really making good use of the medium here and showing some really interesting stuff that we couldn't have gotten on the original series, as silly as it sometimes is, for sure. But, you know.
No, it is really silly. And, you know, they confuse the giants. They're able to do that, which is great. And then they kind of stop for the evening. And unbeknownst to them, they're being watched. And they're attacked by another group. And this group is led by a man named Brand. And he says he needs Kirk's help. Like, everybody needs Kirk's help.
Man, you know, Kirk's advance team's really done a really good job of getting the word out there about just how awesome this guy is, because, you know, he's in such high demand from everyone.
Well, I mean, it must be that ad got out about just how helpful Kirk is. You know, it's playing on all the intergalactic televisions, you know.
Alongside ads for Priceline.com.
Right, that and, you know, for the best attorney. You know,
oh, yeah.
And so this one is, you know, if you need help, call Kirk 555-5555, which probably would be the, you know,
alien computer actual... controlling your society. Yeah. Are you fighting a war with computers? Call Kirk. Kirk can help.
do you need a giant robot to talk itself to death? I'm your man.
Oh man, I would love to see that ad, actually. Someone's got to do that.
Yeah, we really need to happen. So Brand tells them, look, we landed on this planet because we came from the year 1997, where the eugenics wars had been going on, and we escaped Earth, and we landed on this planet, and, well, I mean, everything was going okay until Chang got bored. Why do the bad guys always just getting bored? What is going on in Star Trek, the Gold Key comics? Like, people get bored and then they become bad.
Antagonist motivation is just, wow, all over the map here. And it's just, you know, for the silliest reasons, we get these despotic warlords. I guess that was kind of what happened in the previous issues, too. There was always somebody who took over their planet, you know, for some inane reason. And yeah, we get that again here. So,
well, I mean, I got to tell you, you know, when I maybe they're really playing off that whole idea, idol's hands are the devil's playground, you know. So this guy gets bored and, you know, he decides to wander off in a direction. Nobody knows where he goes. But when he comes back, he has these powers. And he's able to control these people. And the only way that they'll be able to overthrow him, they think, is for them to take the Spectre of the Sun and overthrow Chang. So now you have two competing people looking for this Spectre of the Sun, trying to take out each other, and with Kirk and the crew in the middle.
Yeah. Well, and I love, you know, it's
stuck in the middle with you.
And they never really explain how this scepter is supposed to work. I mean, you know, it's guarded by this robot who's not a very good guard because he only comes out once they've already got the scepter. And Kirk tries to use it and he's like, well, this doesn't work. It's not working. And Spock just says, I'd feared that. I was worried that it wouldn't work. Well, what do you mean you were worried it wouldn't? How is this supposed to work in the first? You haven't explained anything, Spock. Come on.
He was just worried that it might not work because he knew that it probably wouldn't work because he's Spock. Yeah. And so what I love about this is he has them distract the killer robot so he can climb on the killer robot and disable it. Like, it's awesome.
Oh, it's so great.
I was waiting for him to give a killer robot a Vulcan death pinch.
I totally thought that was kind of something they were going for, but yeah, not quite, but yeah. And then this shot of him, I don't know why, I laughed so hard at kind of his pose as he's jumping off the robot as it's being electrocuted. I don't know what it is, just the idea of this tiny Spock leaping off of it here is just hilarious. I love the way this looks.
Well, the fact that he lands on his feet, like, like Spock is a Vulcan, not a cat.
Yeah.
That doesn't, I mean, he can't jump off such high heights and be okay.
I feel like Deadpool's just there. It's like, oh, superhero landing. He's going to do a superhero landing.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Oh my gosh, it's awesome. Well, they end up taking the Spectre of the Sun. They confront Chang, who turns out to be nothing more, apparently, than an illusionist.
Mm-hmm.
So really, all of these, this is where it really doesn't make sense. Like, that all of these illusions you can actually touch and do things with, because, like, he had people carrying him in, and it just, this is where it falls apart, and he was really just trying to get a hold of the Enterprise so he could escape. Because, again, remember, he's bored.
So yeah, he's set up this whole thing just to kind of distract them and keep them busy, I guess, while he tries to get the Enterprise. Okay.
yeah, that's exactly what's happening. There's a big fight. Chang and Kirk, of course, they have to have their fight.
Oh, yeah.
And then Chang is struck by lightning. Like, where did that come from?
Yeah, this story, it's like, man, you find out what his real motivation is, and you realize the entire, like, drama of the past however many pages has had no meaning whatsoever. And then, yeah, the bad guy is killed because, literally, Deus Ex Machina, like, lightning strikes him. Oh, well, he's dead, so, okay, we'll blow up his castle and save the Enterprise, and we're good, I guess.
Yeah, and that was the weird thing, too, is that they have to blow up his castle so that they can destroy whatever it is that's the machine that's holding the Enterprise in place, and then they're able to get away. And it's just, it really is it's an interesting issue because it brings in this history of the eugenics wars, and that being used is really interesting, but the rest of the framework of the story is just so strange. And I mean, really, why is every bad guy just bored? And so they become a bad guy. It's just so weird.
Yeah, it's variations on a theme. Like, I feel like we're kind of reading the same story over and over again with just some peripherals changed a little bit here. And yeah, this one, you know, as silly as some of the other stories were, this one more than any other just is not a good story. Like, it just does not hold together. By the end of it, I'm wondering, like, what did I read, and why did I have to follow them going through all that when ultimately it really meant nothing? So, you know, sorry to be so harsh on this story, but it's just not well written.
It's not. And it's frustrating because, like I said, the story element that you're getting here is actually really interesting with the eugenics wars, and that's going to play out in Star Trek. But it's this weird kind of throwaway thing that doesn't mean anything to the rest of the story because it's not utilized very well.
Yeah, like when I first saw that, I thought, oh, that's really cool. They're using actual Star Trek history. But, you know, really when it comes down to it, it amounts to name dropping and really doesn't play into the story very much at all.
It really doesn't, which is strange because this is a big, like, kind of bombshell to kind of drop on the Star Trek universe here in this story. But again, it doesn't really make sense. So it's a fun, laughable issue, but it really does. This one has some of the bigger problems that we've seen throughout the Gold Key comics, and it's not quite as redeemable, unfortunately, as some of the ones we read last time. So and that leads us into the brain shockers.
Dun dun dun.
I mean, I don't know if there isn't a better name, but it's pretty awesome. The Brain Shockers. And this one is interesting because it starts off kind of like a lot of actual TOS episodes do, where they're on the bridge and McCoy is complaining to Kirk that you're not going on vacation enough and the bridge crew needs a break. And it's very, very much TOS. And I mean, it feels like the beginning of a lot of TOS episodes.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of familiar stuff here. You know, you've got the yeoman on the bridge delivering a report. And yeah, it really feels like the beginning, like you said, of kind of one of those day in the life of the Enterprise kind of situations you get bookending episodes usually. And I think they've done a good job, which is kind of rare in these comics, to really capture that Star Trek feel like you would see on the television screen for sure.
You are exactly correct. And that's why this issue, at least it starts out with a lot of promise because it does. It has that feel of a Star Trek episode. And then it takes an interesting turn. The Enterprise, of course, is attacked because it's always being attacked. It doesn't matter where they go. Everybody's a bad guy and attacking them. And the yeoman that was on the bridge during this conversation finds a door that says, "Do not open." So, of course, she opens it. And out comes the boogeyman. And who is this yeoman's? What is this yeoman's name? That's right. Pandora.
Exactly.
Pandora opened her own door.
Like, I mean, can you get more totally on the nose here with I thought that was great. You know, and they're like, "Oh my god, Yeoman Pandora, she opened the door." And you're like, "Oh god. Okay, I see what you're doing here."
it was ridiculously bad and awesome all at the same time. That part I actually really liked. I thought, okay, we're just going to go with that. Because she let out the boogeyman. And what was really interesting here is the way that they kind of build with Vulcans and what we find out about Vulcans. What did you think about this revelation with Vulcans and their emotion jars?
Well, I was... when I first started this, I was really worried that, you know, they were going to say, oh, this is how Vulcans shed their emotions. They bottled them up in jars. I really liked that, you know, you get a little bit more into it and you find out from the history. No, well, they tried that. This was the first thing they did to try and get rid of emotions. And, you know, it didn't work. So now we just suppress emotion. I was like, oh, okay, good. Because, you know, there's kind of playing fast and loose with canon and that kind of thing. And then there's, well, no, this is so totally ridiculous. That's not how Vulcans are, kind of thing. You know, my inner Trek nerd was starting to rage and then went, oh, okay, I can breathe. They're not saying all Vulcans, you know, bottle up their emotions like this. They just try
to... literally bottle up their emotions.
Yeah, exactly.
And they're all bottled up inside, but they're not inside. They're on the shelf.
It's so deep, man. It's so deep.
Just put your emotions on this shelf, Spock. Okay, I got it. You know, it's like, oh, man, this is awesome. This is just incredible. Well, so it turns out that... the Enterprise was transporting these bottled emotions to a planet when they were attacked. And so Spock and Kirk and McCoy, they all go down to this planet to try and figure out why they're being attacked. The first group they sent down to the planet disappears. So Spock and Kirk, they leave some people in charge. They're like, you guys, you need to find these emotions on and get them bottled back up. And then
so we're looking for an emotion. Okay.
So you're saying it's an emotion and we're looking for it and we're supposed to bottle it again.
So what?
How do you get an emotion in a bottle? That sounds like it's harder to getting a ship in a bottle. Cause that's tough.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's hilarious. It's so awesome. So they go down to the planet and they're looking for what's keeping them, the Enterprise, what had attacked them, and they're not finding it. And then what's weird is that Spock and Bones beam down to the planet and they tell them, hey, we're pretty sure that the emotions escaped to the planet. So, which makes sense. I mean, you know, if you're going to go somewhere, why not try and hide out on a planet that's bigger than, you know, I mean, because I think there's only one door on the Enterprise that says do not open.
So presumably they looked all over the Enterprise for these emotions and couldn't find them. So, I mean, like, did they check between the sofa cushions? Because I know I lose my emotions there all the time. Like, I think it's really amazing that we never really get from them what these are supposed to look like, what they're actually looking for. You know, we know they've entered the bodies of the Enterprise crew by this point. So, you know, there's no indication they even know that these disembodied emotions can do that. So how are they looking for them? What are they looking for here? I'm not clear on how they've eliminated the Enterprise as a possible place they can be.
Yeah, it's... is there a tricorder setting for emotions? I don't get it. So
oops, I had my tricorder set for chronotons. I should have set it for emotions.
Exactly. And so what's funny is that everybody starts getting affected by these emotions and Spock gets really scared and runs off. And he discovers this person on the planet called Maylock, who is an immortal, who again is bored. So he's begun to get people from around the galaxy who pass by for his amusement because, of course, he's bored. And for some reason, I don't know why, but he's stuck in this machine that he can never leave. I don't understand. It's really weird.
Yeah, I really don't quite know what they were going for here. But yeah, again, like you say, we've got the bored villain whose entire motivation is... I was bored, so, you know, I'm gonna basically torture you guys. Like, I don't get it.
Well, and so what's so interesting is he brings them all together, and the entire crew of the Enterprise that, you know, they had lost a landing party, and so all of them basically... end up in front of him so that they can start performing for his pleasure, so they can, you know, he can have them fight or whatever. And Spock is able to fight off the mind control, and he sneaks in to disrupt Maylock's machine and turns the emotions that got lost, the Vulcan emotions, back on Maylock. And sadly, Maylock looks like he's going to forever be locked in a plastic cage of emotion.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, I, you know, this ending is really kind of weird to me. Like, is there, they really act like there's nothing that can be done. Like, they've just lost these emotions now and they can't put them in the shrine that they wanted to. And this guy's stuck here kind of experiencing them. You know, maybe he's getting what he wants, but it really seems like they kind of give up really quickly at the end here. Like, oh, well, they're in him now. We can't really do anything. I guess we better leave. Like, you know, couldn't they try and get those back and maybe just give this guy Netflix or something? I mean, there's a lot of really good shows on there. I really kind of really question this ending here. It seems very odd to me.
Yeah, no, I get it. It is really weird that they just leave this guy to suffer for the rest of his life in a plastic cage of emotion.
And, you know, that really means something when you realize he's immortal, too. So he's just going to be there for all eternity or until this planet is destroyed, basically.
What's funny, though, is that this issue is kind of more fun than the first one. It's just so goofy and off the wall. And, yeah, I thought that this was kind of interesting. And the idea that Vulcans used to take their emotions and put them in bottles, like a genie, and put them on some sort of shelf, they don't do that anymore because they realized by taking their emotions out like that, they were actually losing part of their soul. Mm. And that's why they just started to teach logic. So I thought it was actually kind of a really interesting thing that it almost like the Katra, you know, you could take it and put it in a receptacle. You know, it there's kind of some of that stuff there. It's
kind of
cool.
Yeah, you could kind of almost replace the word soul here with Katra, and it would actually really fit really well with canon. You know, by removing the emotions, you remove a big part of the Katra, and that didn't, you know, that's great. I love that. You know, and in Star Trek III, they refer to the Katra as Spock's soul. So I think that really kind of is a really good parallel there, and I think that works out really well.
No, I completely agree with you, and I think that makes this a really interesting and worthwhile issue, just because that it kind of does start to branch out and tell us a little bit more about Vulcans and to explore what that means to be them. So, yeah, the next issue is called The Flight of the Buccaneer, and if you thought you would never get a pirate issue, arr, matey, you was wrong.
Oh, man. And they just go for broke with this idea here. I mean, we've got pirates with tricorner hats and cutlasses and, you know, ships that look like sailing ships with warp nacelles on them. I mean, you know, they're not just doing space pirates. They're doing space pirates. Like, these are like 18th century pirates in space.
It's crazy. Like, I didn't necessarily understand how and why they were doing this. Why do space pirates actually look like pirates from Pirates of the Caribbean? It's really weird. It's actually kind of an interesting story, though, because Starfleet calls Kirk in the Enterprise saying, look, our dilithium stores have been stolen. And obviously, we all know dilithium is what powers our starships. We need you to track down these pirates who are out of Federation jurisdiction. And so Kirk goes undercover as a pirate with Bones, Scotty, and McCoy. And so actually, the storyline is not that dumb. Mm-hmm. It's actually pretty interesting.
No, it's pretty cool. It actually reminds me of the two-part Next Generation episode Gambit, when Picard and Riker were undercover on the mercenary ship, you know, kind of the space pirates. But again, yeah, with that really strong, actual earthbound pirate pastiche kind of pasted over top of this. It is actually a really interesting story. I like the idea that there's kind of this haven for pirates on this planet, which I will say, just like Yeoman Pandora Trask in the last episode, we have the planet called Tortuga here, which is where the pirates all hang out, which of course is the famous island off the coast of Haiti that was a den of piracy in the 1800s here. So, you know, again, just the same kind of really on the nose stuff, borrowing from Earth mythology and history and stuff here.
Well, and what's so crazy about it too is really they are wearing the pirate out. I mean, they really do. This looks like Pirates of the Caribbean, not Star Trek. That's what's so funny.
Scotty's got the gold earring and they've all got the striped shirts.
What also makes this interesting, and I think actually a good storyline, is the fact that, so to do this, because they have to basically trick these pirates, they go undercover as pirates themselves. They get on this crew of the person that they know has stolen it, this Captain Nova. And while they're on his ship, Scotty and Spock are overheard talking. And Kirk sees that somebody is overhearing them, and so he sells them out, quote unquote, to keep his cred. Mm-hmm. And again, it's just a really interesting storyline, because it's like all those fun, you know, procedural stories with cops going undercover. And it really the storyline, without the ridiculousness of what it looks like, is actually working.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty cool. I really like this bit where Kirk sells out the two of them to the pirate crew. And of course, they're made to walk the plank. So they're basically ejected into space. Luckily, they note in spacesuits so that their suffering can be prolonged. That's what they say. But it's actually, it turns out, so that they can be luckily rescued by the Enterprise a short time later. That's, you know, of course, trailing this pirate ship as it, you know, as they have the captain aboard, kind of thing.
I love that they put them in these like plasticine space suits with the fishbowl helmet.
Yeah, it's like fishbowl and saran wrap.
It is awesome. They throw them out, and it's fantastic. I just love it. So, and then of course, you know, the Enterprise rescues them. It's not a big deal. And Spock, takes the Enterprise then and follows them to the planet that they are headed to. And they land on the planet, and they think this planet is uninhabited, but they meet somebody who's been stranded there. And at the same time, the pirates arrive, pretty much, and they start digging in the place where the dilithium is supposed to be. It's not there. And they blame Kirk, and he's like, what did I do? I've been with you the whole time. And of course, that's when Spock leads the landing party and ambushes them. And then we have a really nice sword fight between Kirk and this Captain Nova.
Yeah, like a very old-fashioned, you know, they do call it an electron cutlass, so it's not quite just, you know, an 18th, 19th century sword, but... You know, they have a really old-fashioned sword fight, dressed, you know, in their pirate get-ups and that kind of thing. And I do have to say again here, artwork-wise, this is really well done. I think this fight just looks gorgeous. Of course, for this collection, it's been recolored and stuff, but, you know, it's just absolutely beautiful. I really, really like the artwork on these pages. And then, so of course, you know, the pirate captain gets away. And Kirk throws his cutlass at him, but misses, but apparently hits something critical in the ship, and it goes careening to the ground and explodes. So that's the end of this this pirate mercenary here.
Yeah, you know, gotta love the lucky throw with the sword Kirk there. I mean, who knew that he was such a good throw with his sword? And then, of course, you know, they have this guy that they met, that Spock had met, and he has actually taken the dilithium, and everybody ends up happy. So, I mean, it's... What's funny is that it is a goofy issue with a lot of strange things going on, but it actually has, I think, of all three of these, I would say this is probably the most interesting story.
I agree completely, yeah.
Yeah. Because it actually, it feels very plausible.
Mm-hmm.
To actually, I feel like they could have done this almost as a episode of Star Trek. And obviously you wouldn't have had people dressed up like pirates this ridiculously, but I think it would have worked really, really well. And so, yeah, I kind of like this one. So kind of looking at these, Dan, and we hadn't done this yet, but what do you think, if you just were rating these three best to worst, what do you think you'd do?
Oh, man, I would almost have to say it kind of goes in reverse order of how they're presented mm-hmm. here. The Flight of the Buccaneer really is, I think, the best story. As silly as it looks and as over the top as it looks, I feel like they had a lot of fun doing this story. And it really shows. Like, they have fun with the story. It has an interesting beginning, middle, and end, and actually holds together really well. And it really kind of breaks the mold of the stories we've gotten so far. So for me, that's the best one. Followed by, I think, The Brain Shockers, which is, you know, even just saying these titles, I'm sorry, they're ridiculous. But, you know, that's a pretty good story. It was, again, kind of falling into the old bored villain trope thing they've created here. But, you know, it wasn't a bad story. It had some really interesting ideas and concepts and using the Trek lore really well. And then, yeah, Scepter of the Sun, I think, was very poor. I, like I said, after I was done reading that story, I kind of put it down and said, like, what did I just read? Like, what actually happened in that story? And, you know, not much. A guy tried to capture the ship. He died from lightning, and then they got free. That's about it.
Yeah. I actually completely agree with you. I think that, yeah, these go in reverse order for which one is good. And you know, by the time you get to Spectre of the Sun in that reverse order, you're just like, all right, this is goofy. But there are some interesting things here. There's some seeds of where Gold Key can really continue to grow. And I'm so interested, honestly, to just continue in this fun series that we've been doing and looking at these volumes. And I'm hoping that Volume 3 will continue to show some of that growth. And I mean, you reference the eugenics wars here. We talk about Vulcans and their emotions and have a kind of a more sophisticated story with the idea of pirates stealing things from the Federation. I mean, like a very early idea for the Orion Syndicate, you know, obviously not buccaneers. their ships actually start to look like sailing. I mean, if you ever saw... Disney did Treasure Island in space, the animated version, and that's what their ships look like. It's pretty ridiculous.
Oh, yeah.
So, but yeah, this is, again, one of the things I love about the Gold Key comics is it's just so much fun and so enjoyable to actually sit down and read them and see where, you know, things work and where they don't. And it's just a joy.
Well, Matthew, it's always a lot of fun talking about the Gold Key comics. You know, the few episodes we've done of these, I've always really, really enjoyed kind of looking back at these late 60s, early 70s take on Star Trek in comic form.
I have too, Dan. It really is interesting to just see where Star Trek came from and really the thing that set it apart. And these are a good indication of how Star Trek could have been, and it again, it's so much fun. It's just so much fun to talk about them, and I love the fact that we get to do it. We've got our associate producers through Patreon who make that possible. We've got Ken Tripp, Brandon Shea Matullah, and Bruce Gibson. All of them through Patreon make sure that Literary Treks and everything from Trek FM keeps coming to you each and every week. Now, we are a listener-supported network, and so... Everything that we do comes because of the generous support from our listeners. You can go to patreon.com/trekfm and see how you can be a part of the team. It's the 50th anniversary of Star Trek. We're celebrating huge here, and we want to make sure that the content coming to you each week is just as good as it's always been, if not even better. So become part of our team at patreon.com/trekfm. So, Dan, when you're not roaming around the Enterprise opening doors that say do not open, where can we find you?
Well, Matthew, you know, those signs that say do not open, they're so tempting. But yeah, when I'm not doing that, you can find me on my website, Treklit Reviews. That's www.treklit.com, where I review Star Trek novels. You can find me on Twitter. My handle there is Kertrats, K-E-R-T-R-A-T-S. I'm on Facebook at facebook.com/treklitreviews. And on Instagram, my username there is Kertrats47. And of course, you can always find me kicking around the Babel Conference on Facebook, posting about all things Star Trek and commenting on all the really great stories that are being posted and talked about there. Matthew, when you're not infiltrating the pirate groups on the planet Tortuga, where can we find you?
Well, you can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. You can also find me doing The Orb with Christopher Jones, where we talk exclusively about Deep Space Nine. You can also find me on the 602 Club, where we don't talk about Star Trek. We talk about all our other fandoms that we really love. It's so much fun. I hope you'll join us there every week for just a great new geeky topic. And then, of course, I'm on a new podcast with my friend John Mills called Aggressive Negotiations, where we talk about Star Wars. And goodness, it is a blast. We're over on the Nerd Party at thenerdparty.com, and you can find us on iTunes under Aggressive Negotiations. And then, of course, I have my own personal website at 42lifeinbetween.wordpress.com. Well, thank you so much for joining us. And until next time, live long and read on.
You call that light reading?
To each his own, number one.